Blog Talk Radio.
Time with Pastor Steph.
You're on with the Due Time with Pastor Steph. How are you this morning? That's what I like to hear. That's what I like to hear. For this is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad in it. So, where were you all week? Oh, we had a smoking week over here on the Due Time with Pastor Steph, as we started off shaking the Monday morning blues with the Stevens. Yes, the relationship clinic was open again, and Pastor Jimmy and Lady Candy Stevens was on with us, and their topic was hints for a successful relationship. Now, I got to tell you, after we had a smoking time last week with the Burns, to follow that up with a smoking two or two, you know, how blessed could we possibly be? You know, you really got to go back and listen to that episode on Monday with the Stevens, because, you know, Pastor Jimmy really laid it down for the men and the women, as we talk about, you know, this disconnect from social media. You know, this has really become a deal breaker, you know, for some couples. You know, Pastor Jimmy said that, you know, he's spoken to some couples about this, and you know, I've had some experiences with this, and you just can't seem to get the men to disconnect from social media when, you know, it's toxic to the relationship. And he had such great advice and counsel, as he said, you know, to the ladies. Now, don't go demanding he get rid of that Facebook or Instagram, but first tell him how you feel. You know, I know, ladies, that you have. Listen, been there, done that, to write a book about it. However, it's all in your presentation. And Pastor Jimmy says, you know, if you approach it the right way, it'll stimulate some thoughts as to how he is not protecting his relationship and his family the way he's committed to, the way he really wants to. A lot of times, I guess somehow or another, they don't realize, you know, what gets put in jeopardy. And when you're yelling and screaming and, you know, demanding, that's all they hear. And I talk about that a lot. You know, who are they really hearing when you're talking? So, you know, if he's not hearing the right thing, even when he's wrong, he's going to be right. And we didn't all had that experience. If you got some husband, you know, you didn't really, they all wrong. I mean, strong and wrong. But ladies, you know, just watch your approach. It doesn't mean that you've been wrong. Listen, you're trying to maximize on, you know, what you're trying to get. So listen, you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar. Now, for the men, he says, ask yourself, do you really want this marriage? Well, if you do, there's going to be some things you're just going to have to cut out and let go. So, you know, he had, awesome advice for the men and the women. And I want to also talk about Lady Candy's advice when I talk about the gestures of love. You know, we're talking about hints for a successful relationship. And those gestures of love, man, that's important. It's important with everybody having a job and you got kids and hobbies and ministry and, you know, just your own personal downtime. You know, those gestures of love are really, really important. And Lady Candy said, go get those smell goods. Yes, she said perfume. Get that sense of the smell in your husband. And she said, bust out that playlist. Yes, get that playlist out. She said her playlist includes a song from Usher and a song from Tank. Well, check that out. She did not say it was some church folk thing. No. She went for Tank and Usher, and there's some other, you know, artists on her playlist. And she mentioned the names of the songs. And, you know, I had never heard of the songs, so I didn't really remember the names, but I definitely remember the names of the artists. So, you know, you want to make sure you pick up that advice from the two of them who have been married for 25 years with two adult children in college. So, listen, they've been doing something right, right? Right. Well, we couldn't finish off a Tuesday morning, a Monday morning, without our switch tip with Shanti. And control your emotions was the word for the week. And listen, didn't I just get finished talking about that? You know, it doesn't mean you're wrong. It doesn't mean you're wrong, but I'm going to go back to the example that I just used. If you control those emotions so you're not yelling and screaming and, you know, you're all hyper and you're throwing stuff and you're burning things and, yeah, you just might get further in life. You know, we're not talking about just in your relationship. You know, control your emotions in everything. You can't be at the job busting off and want to keep that job. Come on, you can't be at the PTA meeting threatening the principal. Yo, just keep it together. So, you know, we want to make sure that we are doing the godly thing. And, you know, it's just be angry, but sin not. So, you know, God gives the concession for being angry. We just got to control those emotions. So another fine word for the week. We got, well. Tuesday morning, let's talk about a Tuesday road in church. Folks, day was up. And, we were in for our second episode of Kingdom Business in our My Two Cents segment. And, some really juicy goodies came out from that episode. And we talked about, you know, us being able to defend why we serve God. I mean, and I'm just going to stick a pin right there. You know, people say, you know, if God loved me or if God loved the world, you know, why do these things happen? And in that particular episode, there was no cutback. And, you know, I'm happy to know that I was not the only person disturbed at the lack of response. Now, you know, we are looking at, you know, a scripted, you know, program here. However, that is a very common question, very common statement. And I have to tell you, a lack of a comeback is also very common. So, you know, we discussed, you know, how to be able to clearly tell people, you know, why we say, you know, God is a loving God despite you know, something may have happened, you know, the day before, you know, on the news or even that morning on the news where, you know, an innocent child was killed, you know, by their parents, you know. But you've got to be ready and willing and able to stand up for God. Okay, so how you calling yourself a person of the king, a child of the king? And you can't do that. And that was one of the things that stuck out, you know, for that particular episode. So we really had a good time. And please join us for episode 3 this week. If you'd like, you can, you know, find out a way to watch it. So give us a hit, 347-685-7777, and find out how you can watch the episode so that you can stay abreast and be able to comment. Okay? All right. Well, wow, Wednesday rolled around. And our girlfriend Vivian started us off with, oh my goodness, her wild story of a woman suing a man in criminal court for $10,000 because the first date was bad. And the judge reprimanded her for bringing that to criminal court. Listen, this is an emotional issue. You ain't got nothing better to do, but the court does. And suing this man for $10,000. Now, I venture to say that if the date was bad, how are you getting $10,000 out of it? Girl, please, go sit down somewhere. Well, you know how it goes on Wednesdays. The ladies reign, and oh, they did a fantastic job, as always. As we talk about relationships, friendships, you know, those toxic friendships and what they look like. Well, we talked about having those friends, those toxic friends, who have that unhelpful communication. Yeah, you know, that unhelpful communication that says, you know, let's bust off, let's go slash his tires, let's go pee his car. Girl, let's go knock on her door. Girl, let's call immigration on her. That ain't a friend. Trust me when I tell you, those unhelpful communications, tips, and toxic behaviors, man, they're going to get you nowhere but in trouble with the Lord. Because you might slide by man, but you will never slide by God. So we had a fantastic conversation about those friendships this week, and we had a fantastic presentation of our Faith Over Fear segment with Pastor Charlotte, and really a nice way to end our Wednesday morning. So, Therapeutic Thursday rolled around, and we talked about the signs that you're a born-again Christian. Now, we had that conversation last week, so it was a continuation of last week's conversation, and the Deep Time crew did a fine job, you know. And, you know, we talked about some of the things that really indicate that we are one of them. And one of the things was meekness. You know, people think that meekness means weakness, and it doesn't. It just really means a humble spirit. And that's one of the things that a lot of people, before, you know, they find the Lord, they have a hard time with, being meek. And again, it's because the world has told them that meekness is weakness. So, you know, a lot of times people feel like they have to prove something. Well, it was wonderful to hear that the Due Time crew shed a bit of light on that meekness issue. And they also got to give their personal testimony of when they realized that God had really done some work in their life, and they were really kind of born again. So you might want to turn back the clock and go and listen via on demand to that episode to find some encouragement as to how to push forward and let the world see Jesus in you, not that old you, but the new you, to show that you are a new creature in the Lord. Alrighty, yes, I'm saying that. A new creature. You know, old things have passed away, but oh, behold, all things have become new. So go back and get that encouragement. Okay? Well, today is Freestyle Friday, and we get to do whatever we want to do. Now, I don't even know why we say that, because we only do one thing, and that's talk to the men. And I guess considering that you never know what the men are going to come out with, we can leave it like that. We Freestyle Friday, you know, we can do whatever we want to do. Yeah, well, that hasn't landed. But we're looking forward to hearing from our men today, who have been doing a fine job sending us into a wonderful weekend. So, you know, get yourself together. Get yourself together as God is really showing us his love today. And I'm going to give you an opportunity to go get that healthy breakfast. I'm going to give you an opportunity to go tell somebody that it's due time when Pastor Steph is on. And make sure you go nowhere, because we'll be right back.
When I was younger, I didn't want to be the pale one when all my friends were getting tan. I thought a tan looked cute. Yeah, I was told about the dangers of being out in the sun, but it's not like I was in the sun all the time. And I only got burnt once or twice. Then I started to notice these ugly sunspots and wrinkles. That's when my doctor mentioned sun damage. Look at me now. No sexy tan, and I'm dealing with skin cancer. If I had known then what I can see now.
Good morning, and good morning again. You're on with It's Due Time with Pastor Steph, and it is Freestyle Friday. Oh, my goodness gracious. Now, TGIF is definitely appropriate today, but I'm grateful to God that he has been so gracious to us as he has ushered us into the end of our work week. And we're safe. We're safe and sound. Our family is safe and sound. And we have so much to give God great thanks for. And let's celebrate. Let's celebrate that, you know, not only that, but we're in the end of July. Can you imagine? That will officially mean that more than half of the year has gone by already. And I can remember when 22 came in. Wow. Yeah. So, let's get our news on, because, man, we got some stuff to talk about today. Well, you know, I got to tell you, control your emotions is really on the horizon today. As this Oregon father of two was gunned down in a suspected road rage incident last week, after he accidentally splash windshield wiper fluid on a passing BMW. Now check this out. So you have this couple, Dennis and Brandy. Dennis is 45, And they were, you know, traveling on the highway. And they spotted a black BMW trying to pass them. So she told the newspaper, Brandy, that her partner sprayed wiper fluid on the windshield of their car, and that some of the liquid may have landed on the BMW. So she was like, you know what, just ignore them. He's having a bad day. Don't even worry about it. So the BMW kind of, you know, sped off. And a few miles later, they spotted the same car parked on the side of the road. Well, as Dennis drove by the BMW, it started to follow them. And it was like trying to drive them off of the road. Well, they almost ran into some oncoming traffic, but, you know, they thank God they missed that. And after several attempts of that, she just told him to pull over, and they just decided to call 911. Well, for some reason, he got out of his car, and the BMW driver stopped parallel to them and opened fire. And she said the last thing he said was, oh, my God, they shot me. And, you know, there was another passerby, and, you know, some good Samaritan tried to give them, you know, give him CPR. But unfortunately, you know, he didn't make it. And I want to go back to his last words. His last words were, oh, my God, they shot me. You know why? Because he didn't think it was that serious. Because in reality, it wasn't that serious. Yeah, all of some wiper fluid on your car, and, you know, whether it was by mistake or intentional, I mean, how bad could it be? And this is why we cannot underestimate the frame of mind these people are in. Now, you got shot and murdered over some windshield wiper fluid on someone else's car. Yeah. Really. And unfortunately, the oh my God, he shot me, it wasn't a lesson learned. It was a lesson learned for her, but it wasn't a lesson learned for him. But he'll never live to realize that, you know, certain things you just don't do, or, you know, certain things you ignore, you know, certain things you don't get involved in, whatever. He had two teenage daughters and an adult stepson, and that's who's left to mourn his death over something dumb, over something that was so small and insignificant. So, you know, control your emotions. You know, and I'm just going to sound that out today because, you know, it wasn't until after I gave the recap of the switch tip that this here is this whole series of stories is about controlling your emotions. Yeah. Our next story is about a Taco Bell manager who has they have lost their minds. So here's this story. So you have these two young ladies. Okay, so Brittany Davis and another girl she was with, CT is what they're calling her, they went to Taco Bell out in Dallas. And somehow or another, their $31 order needed to be corrected. So they were told that they went through the drive-thru three times in the attempt to get this order taken care of and corrected. However, it never was. So somehow or another, they ended up going to the door and an employee let them in and locked the dining room door behind them. So they say as they were talking to the staff about this order for about 10 minutes, a conversation ensued and became combative. Now, they don't say whether they were throwing hands, they don't say nothing, but I guess at least they were arguing. They say a female manager who was not involved in the melee came out with a bucket of scalding hot water and threw it on the girls, the two complaining girls. And they say that this boiling water was literally had their clothes stuck to them. That's how hot the water was. So this Brittany ended up having seizures due to the shock of, I guess, this hot water on her. And they were rushed to the emergency room where she ran in naked. Now, or maybe CT ran in naked. Somebody ran in naked because they had taken the scalding clothes off of them. So it must have been CT because they said that she had Brittany had 10 seizures and deep burns to her chest, stomach, face, chest, legs, arms, and stomach. This lawsuit is claiming. And this hot water got on both of the girls. So they are both now suing. And yet again, we have another story of this manager gone wild. Employees gone wild or mad. Now, I read the comments of the newspaper post. And it's funny because there's a lot of hesitancy in the belief of the story. So they're saying that, you know, readers are saying that, you know, there's a part of the story we have not heard, that, you know, these girls probably went up in there and they were combative. And I'm just trying to figure out if the lobby was locked, that explains why they had to go through the drive-thru several times. But my thing is, if the lobby was locked, why would you unlock the door to let them in? Now, who does that? Now, they didn't say that the manager let them in. They said it was just the employees let them in because it was the manager who supposedly threw the boiling hot water. So this has made it all the way to court where there has been a lawsuit filed. So again, we talk about control your emotions because, you know, even with the other readers saying that there's something wrong with the story, yeah, that might be true, but that means that somebody lost their cool. Now, they're saying that, you know, why would a manager just come from the back with some scalding hot water? Well, listen, my thing is, even if these girls were combative, why would you pour scalding hot water on them? You don't think you're going to be charged for this stuff? That's the part that, when we talk about controlling your emotions, you don't think that there's going to be some repercussion behind this behavior? They didn't say that none of the accounts say that, you know, they were brandishing a gun or a knife or any kind of weapon. But my thing is, listen, to go get boiling water, put it in the bucket, bring it back, and then throw it on somebody would really mean that's like going to a locked gun box, going to another room, getting the ammunition, loading the gun, and then coming back. There's a lot of preparation in getting the scalding water putting it in a bucket and picking it up and throwing it. Because my thing is, if it was enough water to scald both these girls, that bucket had to be pretty heavy. So how have you literally picked it up to toss it on somebody? So, you know, again, you know, a lot of these readers said that they really thought that there was a lot more to this story. But like I said, you know, I have a lot of questions because let's say for argument's sake, they're right. The girls were combatants and they were causing a ruckus. Well, then that means that when they went through the doctor three times, they were causing a ruckus then. So you would literally open up your lobby door. You would really open up the dining room door to let them in when they already been cutting up outside. Yeah. Something ain't right in this story. So, yeah. So here we are, another incident where we were not controlling our emotions. And now somebody going to jail. Because regardless of whether these girls did something or not, yeah, you're a manager. You're supposed to be the one that keeps your head. You know, and we could understand even if you got into a shouting match, you know, because sometimes when people really get on your nerves. And I'm telling you, I've worked in the restaurant, you know, industry, you know, from the McDonald's aspect a few times in my life. And, you know, I've worked in retail. And I'm telling you, some people can really rock your world. I'm telling you, they can really take you to places you don't want to go. So I could even see if, you know, the manager kind of got into the melee and argued with them, and they're like, well, you know, you shouldn't be stooping that low, you know, to argue with the people. Okay, fine. But the boiling hot water, no. That scalding hot water. And to think that somebody would even have a seizure, even one seizure, you know, I can only imagine. And then you don't know the health of these people. So anything could set. You know, was she, you know, an epileptic in the first place? So you don't know what's going on. So, you know, just keep your head, people. Keep your head. Okay? All righty. Here we go again. I told you, this whole session is going to be about control your emotions. Now, you have this Texas mother. Again, in Texas. We're dealing with the Texas people today. Her daughter was caught in a crossfire, and this is how this happened. They were actually together in the car, and you had these other two men. One guy was trying to rob another gentleman, and when he ran off, the one who was the victim shot at the one who tried to rob him. But instead of hitting the robber, he hit the 9-year-old girl. And here's what's causing a ruckus. Because it went to court. And the gentleman who shot the little girl by mistake is not going to jail. No. The grand jury rendered him innocent because he was a victim of a crime and he did what any normal person would have done. Now, this is why I tell y'all we ain't got no business being on nobody's jury. When he did what any other normal individual would have done. First of all, why do you have a gun in the first place? They don't say whether the gun was legal or illegal, but it does say that he will not do any time and that he will not be able to carry a gun ever again. And the mom is literally outraged, because her and the aunt, you know, they gave their comments to the news, And, you know, they were like, well, what kind of, you know, outcome is this? He shot and killed my daughter, my niece, and he doesn't have to, you know, deal with any pushback from that at all, other than he is able to walk free and not be able to carry a gun ever again. Who does that? Who renders that kind of verdict? So, you know, the mom is really devastated, which is understandable, which is definitely understandable, because, again, you let somebody walk, even if you don't charge him with murder, you need to charge him with something. Because, listen, they've charged people, they didn't have to do a whole lot of time, but they've charged people like if somebody was on your property or in your home and, you know, in self-defense. They've charged people. And even if they did 6 months or so or whatever, you know, you didn't do a whole lot of time like the average person would have done if it was done, you know, intentionally. But, you know, to come back and say he did what the average individual would have done, and that shot back at the person who was trying to rob him, I'm sorry, that is garbage. That is garbage. Let me hear from you. You know, I'm talking about some stuff here this morning. We're going to talk about the manager scolding the victim, the complainant of their food. We're talking about the guy shooting at the other one, and now he hits the 9-year-old girl, and he did no punishment at all. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong to some of you. But what do you think? 347-285-7777. Now, I got another story for you that's going to close this story thing down, but I really want to hear from you on this one. Now, I'm sure if for those of you who watch the news, you've probably heard this already, or if you stay in the news, you've probably heard this already. But here in New York, you know, and from what I'm understanding, it's the nation, it's the United States. You have these migrants from across the border who have been allowed by the Biden administration, so they say, they have been allowed to cross the border and live here. Now, this goes a little further than this. So here we have my favorite mayor, Eric Adams, who's, you know, unhappy because he says that, you know, the Big Apple is being overloaded with, you know, these immigrants. Well, you have this one couple. They talk about two couples in this article. So I just want you to pay attention to what I'm getting ready to read. So you have a couple who have 4 children, ages 2 to 8 years old. Now, they say that back in April, they left Venezuela, crossed the U.S.-Mexico border into San Antonio in July. Then their border control got them to immigration and told them how to apply for asylum. And in August, immigration sent them to the Bronx. Now, they say that some Catholic church out in San Antonio gave them food and clothing and all kinds of other stuff and put them on a bus to another Catholic church in Washington. And then that church put them on another bus to New York, to the Bronx. So that's why I initially said that it started from the beginning to the Bronx. Because, yeah, at the end of the day, they did it. Okay? So they now went to a homeless intake center in the Bronx. There were no beds. Supply, no beds. And they got sent to a transient hotel in Brooklyn. So now they go to this, at the time of this report, they were going back and forth to this Brooklyn shelter, from the Brooklyn shelter to another shelter to try to see if they had beds. So now this is what they're doing. So you got this family who you've received from Venezuela. So now whatever was going on in Venezuela, they are now homeless in New York, pretty much. Because as of the end of this report, they did not have a room or anything. They didn't have anything, okay? So they're saying that each night they have to go to the hotel to find out if there's even room for them. Now, at the same time, you have this other family, Jorge, who's 35. He's married with another set of four kids, ages 14 to 28. Now, last I checked, 28 wasn't no kids, but they're children, okay? They left from Venezuela, and they, again, ended up in San Antonio. So because his friend who entered the United States went to New York, he decided he wanted to go to New York. So when they asked him, well, why New York? He says, adventuring. Oh, Jesus. And I mean that literally. It seems like a place we'd like to live. It reminds us of home. Well, if it reminded you of home, why are you here? I'm lost. Okay? So, they say that him and his pal, you know, they talked about staying at this intake center. And he bought a ticket for him and his family, for them to get on a Greyhound and come to New York City. Well, once they got here, where'd they go? They went to the intake center called the Wales Family Residence in the Bronx. So check this out, because this here is what sent me into orbit. So he said he was hoping to qualify for 2 years of assisted living, and he was told that they did not qualify. They told us to come back and present ourselves again and ask for another appointment to see if we qualify in the future. Now, I'm sorry. I hate to hear of the plight of other people in other countries, you know, because we're always in the middle of life. I don't care where you are, you're always in the middle. There's always someone better, and there's always someone worse. But he said that, Adam said that as of Tuesday, there were 2,800 asylum-seeking migrants entering the city's shelter system in the recent weeks. And why I said he sent me into orbit is because I'm going to go back to what he said. He said, you intentionally came here. These people are leaving from where they are. This is not new, but I'm talking about this particular article and these particular set of people. They are leaving where they are to come here to live off us. Now, let's talk about the people who came here and, you know, they said they came, you know, into Ellis Island. Those people came here and they worked. They worked. They helped build New York. They helped build this. They helped build that. And I'm not saying some of them didn't live off of New York or whatever. I wasn't here. I don't know nothing about that personally. But that is always the defense of, you know, that's always the defense when people start talking about the immigrants. They always talk about how they came here. Yes, we came here legally. We came to Ellis Island. We worked, blah, blah, blah. You literally said you and your four kids and your wife up to the age of 28 years old. So that means an adult. you talking about, is headed straight for the intake center in the Bronx and will apply for 2 years of assisted living, and I couldn't get food stamps. I have a mortgage. I have bills. I get a fixed income, but I could not get food stamps for me and my family when I was working and my money was tight, blah, 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 paying my mortgage, and I'm working and paying taxes. You told me, and people like me know, God is a keeper. I will not deny that, because I always say to you here, we can't even close the freezer doors. When they come here for Sabbath, on Sabbath morning, God forbid they want to bring some ice cream, because y'all must go drink the milk, because we don't have no freezer space. So God has never denied us, but that's not what I'm talking about here. I'm talking about those of us who live here. We have always had this same complaint. Our tax dollars, you came here looking for 2 years worth of assisted living, and the people here who legitimately need it. Now, I just happen to have a good job. I just happen to have good income, even from a fixed income. So God is good that I can, you know, really kind of, you know, hold it together. But there are people out here who are really struggling. They are really struggling, and they can't get nothing, and they're paying their taxes. And you are opening up the doors for people. This is your mindset. Can I read to you what he said again before I start talking to my men? He said that him and his friends had talked about the pal from Venezuela who had come here had talked about how great New York City was. They had gone to New York City, so he wanted to go there too. And when they asked him why, he said, adventuring. It seems like a place we'd like to live. It reminds us of home. Well, let me tell you something. You're walking into people's home. This is where these people live. There's no adventure about living in the Bronx. They would not like to live there, but they have no other choice but to live there. And now you're coming to take what little that they're not getting away from them. What kind of madness is this? What kind of madness is this? Now, the reason why I say allegedly coming from the Biden administration is because a while ago we did a segment about, you know, the Biden administration, you know, giving out vials or crack or something like that. And then come to find out, we saw, you know, that there were subsequent writings that, you know, the Biden administration was not, you know, spearheading that. So I'm saying, you know, I'm just going to do like everybody else doing it, allegedly. Where is my brother Al? Because I'm kind of mad. Where is brother Al? Let me get my brother Al turned on here. Good morning, brother Al.
Morning, morning, and morning. How you doing?
I'm mad, brother Al. We got some stories.
You know, you know, Pastor Steph, for the last few days, you've been mad, all right? You was mad yesterday. You mad today. We gotta fix this madness.
Well, you know what?
We gotta fix this madness.
Two times through, I always kind of get myself together. That's why I hurry up and when I start getting mad, I hurry up and put y'all on, because y'all always make me laugh and turn down the anger
I know.
And the frustration.
Hey, listen.
No, y'all do a great job.
I know, but listen, I'm gonna give you a good quote this morning to make you feel a little better. All right,
okay.
And this quote says, if you want to be perfect, go sell your possession and give to the poor, and you will have treasure in heaven. And that's from our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Oh, we got a biblical quote coming through this morning. All right, now.
That's right. Oh, yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for that quote, Brother Al. Brother Al, I'm going to start with the manager who supposedly poured the scalding hot water on the two young ladies, Miss Brandy and Miss CT, after they were complaining about not getting the correct order. So what's your thought? What's your thought?
That's just like reverse road rage, you know, but just inside. I'm listening to the story, and it's like you said, you know, we as people have to learn to control our emotions. It's like something happened and people get so angry, and when they get angry, this thought come in their head to do, okay, do this, and they just do it out of the anger. And I'm listening to the story. Okay, so like you said, the lobby had to be locked. So I'm looking at when these people went, and you know, and the people fought too. When you went through the drive-thru the first time and got your food, you should have checked your food before you left. Okay, they should have did that, but they didn't. So as they going back and forth through the drive-thru, the manager was back there boiling that water. She got the boy, where you get the hot water from? She was boiling that water, said they come through here one more time, and then you let them in. You let them in so you can throw the water on them. I'd have just sat there and said, listen, we did, they being irate. You know, I'm calling police. But you let your, you probably told that employee, yo, go ahead and open the door and let them in. And you opened the door and you threw hot water on them. Like, are you serious? So I know they got all type of second, third degree burns.
Yeah. They said that, you know, that one Brittany individual, they say that she was the one who was having multiple seizures. She had deep burns on her chest and stomach, and they said that she had severe burns in her face, chest, legs, arms, and stomach. They say that she was, they say when the CT was released from the hospital, they said her mother had to remove all the mirrors because she couldn't bear to see her own face. The burns had the rest of her body, the burns to the rest of her body caused her skin to bubble the size of softballs. That's how hot the water was. Now, Brother Al, here's my thing. And you tell me what you think. Now, you know what? It's funny because I said to myself, I wonder if she told them to open up the door and that was her plan. So I have to agree with you that was my thought as well. Because why would you open up the lobby door if it was locked and y'all were closed? But my other thought was, you really thought that you were going to pour hot water on these girls and you weren't going to pay no price for this? How do you know that they won't charge you with attempted murder?
Right. Because one of the first things, like I tell people when they come to the law, one of the first things they're going to say is, okay, you was inside safe. Why did you open the door? That's going to be one of the questions.
Right.
You were safe. So why did you open the door? So you meant to do this.
Yep, that was my thought. They circulated three times. They circled three times. So clearly the lobby wasn't open. That's why they kept circling the drive-thru, because that was the only way they could get to talk to somebody. So why would you open up the door? That made no sense. So now with you going out there with this boiling hot water, it does appear as though that was intentional. It does. You can't even get around that.
Yeah.
I don't know, brother.
And that right there will be first degree assault. Because you planned it.
Yeah.
You planned it because you opened the door, you had the water boiling, and you waited for those people. So you meant to do that. You had a plan to do that.
Yep. All right, Brother Al. You got this mom who's outraged because a robbery was taking place near to where her and her daughter was sitting in a car, and I believe in a car. They weren't too far from the robbery. The robber did not succeed But as he ran off, the victim shot at the robber. But instead of hitting the robber, he hit the 9-year-old little girl, and it killed her. And, you know, she was in the hospital for a minute, and then she ended up dying. So when it went to the grand jury says, well, we're not going to charge him with anything because he was the victim of a crime. And he did only what normal people do. He only responded the way normal people responded. So the worst that he has is that he could never carry a gun again. Is that justice?
Not at all. And from hearing the story, I'm quite sure he was on the other side of the fence. I'm quite sure of it. First of all, you're not supposed to just shoot out in the open like that, because even the police officers are not supposed to do that. If they, you know, outside like that and shooting in a crowd or shooting while there's people outside, because once that bullet missed, that bullet keep going until it hits something. You know, like it's just like when people say, oh, it ain't doing nothing, you shoot up in the air. That bullet got to come down. And it's so crazy. I saw something like that where some people playing around, shot up in the air, and the bullet came down in another area, hit somebody and killed them. They didn't even know it. So that bullet gonna keep going till it hits something or somebody. And for you to sit there and say, oh, that's all we're going to do. We're going to just take the gun away. You never can carry a gun again. But then you got this little innocent liar gone. It's crazy. He got to be on the other side of the fence. I promise you.
Well, I got to tell you, that is not true in this particular case.
I'm shocked and appalled.
Absolutely. Surprise, surprise, surprise. Yeah.
Wow.
Surprise, surprise. Yeah, I was surprised myself. You know, I was fishing for the picture. I was like, y'all going to tell me who did this shooting. Yeah. Fair enough. We're wrong this go around. Yeah, yeah. All right, Brother Al. I'm going to go to Pastor Kale before I touch on this last story, because I want to talk about that story.
Okay.
I really want to hear what you men got to say. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we're going to say good morning to Pastor KL. Good morning, Pastor KL.
Good morning, good morning. Well, Al gave the spiritual quote, so I guess I'll go the other way. I'll be Al today. And my quote is, ABC is easy as 1, 2, 3 by my boys, the Jackson 5.
Oh my goodness gracious. I can't. I really need to send this big time crew for a mental evaluation. Oh my goodness gracious. Thank you for that quote, Pastor Kale. I'll accept that this morning. Oh my goodness. All right, so we've got some stories to talk about before we talk about our big story today. I don't even know if we're going to get to the main topic after I done got this story. But we're talking about this Taco Bell manager. And as you heard, you know, the two young ladies were unhappy with their order. They spent $31 in Taco Bell, which is already a crime. They spent the $31. It wasn't right. They circled the drive-thru 3 times. Couldn't get no satisfaction. Then they went to the door, the dining room door. They were allowed in. The door was locked behind them. And as the arguing started, the manager, they say, who was not a part of the melee, came from the back and threw scalding hot water on these two young ladies. And, you know, you've heard, you know, how bad it, you know, how bad it was for them. And now, you know, it's a lawsuit. What goes through your head? You know, me and that Brother Al said this was a setup. Do you think that?
Well, I mean, it was definitely a setup. But I will tell my listeners, this is why I do not go through the drive-thru. I don't go through drive-thru for nothing. I don't care whether it's early in the morning, late at night. I refuse to go through the drive-thru because I need to see my food. And I need to be able to talk to somebody right away, you know. But, yeah, if I'm spending all this money, I want my food to be right. You know, so I don't think that they did anything wrong. Now, they might have been a little elevated in their attitude process. But again, it's still my money. And you on the inside, hearing me on the outside, now you think that you're going to shut me up by trying to hurt me? You've already hurt my pockets. Now you want to hurt me physically. Yeah, that was a plan. Who? I mean, I've worked in Wendy's. I've never seen anybody on the back burner boiling water. For what? So it wasn't even like you had water there already boiling. You did this on purpose. You did it on purpose. So I think they need to be under the jail. Everybody that was involved, from the person who opened the door to the person who locked the door behind them to the person who threw the water. Because there hadn't been a conversation on the inside what we were going to do.
Right, right. That allowed you, that encouraged you to open up that door. Absolutely. Because not a regular worker is not going to open up the door, Pastor KL. A regular worker is not going to open up the door.
Right.
They're not going to open up the door unless they're told to open up the door. Because, again, this is why the lobby is closed and the drive-thru is open. So that's the first thing. Did you bust out with some water or oil or a gun or whatever it was? Yeah, that was, you know what? Go ahead and open up that door. Open up the
door. Not only that, I mean, for the worker, it'd be foolish because you know the customer is already irate.
Right.
Because of their food, and they're not getting any satisfaction. So
right.
Why would I open up the door and be in the middle of that? I don't know if they're coming in shooting. I don't know if they're coming in slapping. Why would I be a part of that? I didn't even make your food. It wasn't me.
Right. Right. I'm not opening up the door because you already irate from the outside. And that's why we got you on the outside. Because the lobby is closed. We're not dealing with you person to person like that. So, yeah, that sounds like a plot to me, too. I agree with the two of you. And we'll find out how this one goes down. Well, how about the victim shooting at the robber? His bullet hits the little girl, kills her, and now he has to do no time. There's no punishment other than he can't carry a gun ever again. Is that justice?
You know what? It might sound bad, but I think it is. My intent was not to kill the young lady, but I was in defense mode. You know, you came up against me, and I was trying to get you. You know, in my mindset, I'm not trying to kill her. I'm trying to kill you. Now, to be honest with you, that's in my mindset. I want to kill you because you violated me. You know, so it's not like he went out to kill this person or even to kill the robber. He didn't come out the door that day and say, I'm going to kill somebody. He was defending himself. So I'm trying to kill you. If you hurt me or you hurt one of mine, I'm trying to kill you. And unfortunately, you know, some folks think, anybody who's in the way, go get it. So I don't think where it was purposely done where he killed this woman. Now he might have, I guess, should have got a little time or slapped with a fine or something. But I don't think he should have been sitting in jail, you know, saying just waiting to get old, because he got violated.
Oh no, absolutely not. And that's definitely, you know, something that I stated. I don't think, you know, but you got to get reckless endangerment of something. In what world do we just fire a gun? And never attack. I think you came on a little after we went through this the story. No, my argument is he does not go down for attempted murder. No, he does not go down, you know, for anything more than reckless endangerment, because we are never allowed to just open fire. Not only that, he wasn't in any imminent danger anymore. The man was running off. He was running off. So now you have, you know, now it's not like, let's say for argument's sake, they got to scuffling over the gun. Like, you holding a gun on me and now I'm trying to take a gun from you, which would be dumb. But if you wanted to go that route, you go that route. And now, and the gun went off. You know, then at that point, right. You know, I could see them saying, okay, well, you know, nothing, because, you know, you're trying to protect yourself. But the robber attempted the robbery, and for whatever the reason is, he was fleeing the scene. And in his fleeing, that's when this gentleman shoots at him. And in his shooting and trying to target the robber, you shoot the little girl. And that's why you need to have like a reckless endangerment charge. Because you know what? All right, right. So that's the way you choose to defend, you know, quote unquote, you know, respond, defend, because you're not defending yourself anymore. But respond, then that's one thing. But you can't just be out here shooting an open gun. So, yeah, reckless endangerment, a fine or something, not just saying nothing.
Right. Right. I'm in agreement with that.
No, not nothing. No, you know, we're not going to say nail him and put him under, you know, feed him the big, you know, Bertha and you know, all them other people y'all send, y'all send the people to. But definitely not walking off with anything. All right. Thank you for joining us today. I want to talk about this migrant issue. And where do we go from here? So you have this issue of these migrant people coming from Venezuela, coming through Texas. Let me put your mic on. Hold. So you got these migrants coming from Venezuela into Texas and ultimately landing in New York. And these two particular couples we're talking about are from the Bronx, are landing in the Bronx. Now, they have, in my opinion, pretty much said, you know, I'm coming here to live off of the New Yorkers. You know, he says that his friends came here. That's where he wants to go. What else does he say? He said that, you know, it seems adventure. He wants to adventure. It's adventuring. And he says that he is looking. He was applying. I want to make sure I get this right because I don't want nobody to say I'm doing anything wrong. He was applying for 2 years of assisted living. And he was told he did not qualify. He did not qualify, but they told him to come back and present himself again and ask and find out if he would be eligible for future benefits. Now, Brother Al, I'm going to ask you, what's your thought on all of this?
It is absolutely insane. You know, I've been saying this way before, you know, that what gets me upset with America. We will take care of everybody else except our own, you know, and so basically what happened from listening to the story, he spoke to his friend. His friend was like, listen, bro, they take care of you over here. You come over here, you can get this, you can get that, and you can get this. So he packed up his family and was like, all right, cool. I'm going to come over there so I can get that as well. And that's what he did.
All righty. Pastor KL, what say you?
Well, I was sitting here just wondering. Most folks know I was born in the West Indies, so I'm kind of down with you know, I don't have a few dollars, so I'm thinking if I come to the Bronx, you know, maybe they can help me out, because I mean, I'm an immigrant. I just don't understand how, as you said earlier, you know, we the people who are struggling. You know what I mean? We have our mortgages, we have this, we have that, and we can't get, you know, $50 in food stamps. $50. We ain't even asking for a whole lot. $50. Yeah, and these folks, you know, they get paid for 2 years to get on their feet. I ain't been on my feet for a long time. So I just don't understand how they look past us and bring all these folks in, and they have enough money to take care of them, but yet we have people laying and sleeping in the streets.
Yep.
On the train
yep.
station, in the park
yep.
bench, that we can't seem to fund for. We have people who fought for our country, you know, talking about the veterans, who are out in the street and we can't seem to fund for, but we can take all these folks from all over in everybody else's country and take care of them because we are the melting pot. Well, I'm melting in this pot.
You know, I think I agree with both of you. And I think one of the things that also enrages me is the fact that these people, they ain't coming with one kid. They're coming with four. Now, let me paint this picture the way I'm seeing it. Y'all help me if I'm, you know, y'all always correct me when y'all don't agree with me. I got four kids. I done made four kids, and I'm impoverished. But after I make my four kids, I'm going to pack up my four kids, and we're going to go live someplace else. Now, we ain't caring about making these four kids. Now, we already complained about the people who do this here on the soil. Y'all ain't thought about all these, you know, oh, we ain't got no money. Well, y'all ain't thought about all this before y'all start popping up all these kids. So now we are not only dealing with people who are born here like this, but I remember catching hell when I was raising my girls and trying to get them health insurance. And you had to jump through all kinds of hoops in order to get health insurance for these children. And I remember having to subsequently pay. That wasn't a lot of money, but I still had to pay for my girls to get health insurance. They have this thing now where once you, okay, so you get one level of health insurance, I think it's up to, what, 21 or so. And Shantish, you can correct me if I'm wrong. But once you cross over a certain age, the health insurance shifts. So your dental, you don't get all the dental care you got before. Not you got paid for certain things to be done. You don't get certain health benefits. You have to pay. We're talking about those of us who get Social Security, we now have to pay. I have to pay for a health a prescription plan, whether I can afford it or not. I automatically have to pay. So not only who is that building a house in the background? Not only do we have to, you know, they're taking money out of your Social Security. But then you have to pay for your prescription plan. And again, whether you can afford it or not, you have to pay it. Now, why would I have to pay for a prescription plan when the only way I can get Social Security is if I'm ill? And if I'm ill, that means I need a prescription or two. So you gonna make me pay for something that I absolutely have to have. But now you're letting in people who have not one, not two, but we're talking about at least two families who now have four children who are bringing their children over here. And now our children, they're still fighting. You now have to open up schools to feed some of the children born on this soil. Brother Al, you better start talking or either I'm not going to stop. What you got?
Yeah, you 100% right. You know, I look at that too as like, you know, again, you won't take care of us. You know, say us who's struggling, sleeping on the train, barely making it. But these people will come over and take full advantage. And they come in with pride. They, you know what I'm saying? They come on. I got six kids and we're hungry. All right, here's $5,000 in food stamps. Take care of your business. You know what I'm saying? I go there, you give me $2. Hey, bro, I need more than $2. You know, just like you said with the dental, even with the insurance. We struggle with the insurance. They give them a ton of insurance. Now, my kids then got older. You take away my dental for them. They only can get two teeth clean. You know what I'm saying? And now, they only can get two day teeth clean. And there's them. Because you just took mine and gave it to those four kids, you know, and nothing against the kids. But this is what they do, and I try to figure out why. Why do you do that? We got people like Pastor Kale said. We got military people who fought for this country, you know, who went through so much stress of seeing people get murdered, and they kind of low mental, and they sleeping in the streets, and y'all don't do absolutely nothing. But these foreigners come over, you give them everything. I don't understand it.
All right, where's Pastor Kale? We talking about the kids, Pastor Kale. We talking about the kids. We talking about their kids versus our kids. And I have to tell you, I'm taking this a little personal this morning.
Well, you know, a person like me who got 8 kids, you know, I've been taking it personal. You know,
I just spit my water out, Pastor Kale. You wanna warn me? I almost choked.
Even with family benefits is expensive. You know what I'm saying? When you get benefits for the family at your job. But here these people are, first of all, unresponsible or irresponsible. You know, you have one child, you know you ain't got no money. So you and Chi-Chi have another baby. You still ain't got no money. So you having all these kids, you know what I mean, and the rice and the peas ain't stretching as far as you needed to stretch. Now you got to go to a whole nother country, you know, with you and the 4 Chi-Chis. And now you want to sit there and not listen. When you want something, you go up there and you put on your sad face and you act like me don't know English. No English, but me hungry. You know, all that stuff. And these folks, they fall for it. Now, when me and my big black stuff come up there and tell you I'm not hungry, they gonna tell me go get a job. Go find someplace to get a job. They're not going to consider that I might really be hungry. You know, listen, a homeless person on the street is not always homeless because they were careless in what they did.
Right.
You know,
right.
A lot of times it's just circumstance. You know,
absolutely.
But no one seems to look at that. Listen, if I was homeless, living on the street, and you think I wouldn't want a job? So for you to keep on telling me to go get a job, if I'm asking you for 50 cents, you tell me to go get a job, you think if somebody would hire me looking like this, I would be asking you for 50 cents? I don't think you look at it from that concept. But yet, you know, Julio Iglesias and Chi-Chi can come and give you these sad stories. One of the babies is wrapped up in a towel or whatever, like they just came out the manger. And now you don't give them money for 2 years. I don't understand.
And I think that's what's making me angry too, gentlemen. You have already, he said, I got to read this again. He said he was hoping to qualify for 2 years of assisted living. That means that's the program. That's the program. You can automatically get assisted living for 2 months. We can't even get assisted living for 2 months. And again, I haven't gotten to the veterans yet. I'm still focusing on the kids because I do want to focus on the fact that we're irresponsible in a country where we're impoverished. And now, like you said, we didn't have to leave the whole country to make life better for us. Well, if you already knew that you were having difficulty, what happened? Why nobody was thinking about all of this stuff? And listen, you know, I take a lot of things into consideration, especially after the call on my life. You know, I've always had to, you know, think of others and other situations from very young, because I've always dealt with, you know, someone who was not, you know, on top of the world. So, you know, that's always been my thing. However, you know, when I've struggled, and I know other people have struggled, and I have neighbors and, you know, other friends and associates, you know, we get to talking about this thing, you know, and to hear that this is just the way of the world now. And you know what? I say just keep on making the money. Let us all go back to the way it was. Y'all were cutting checks. You might as well go ahead back there and do that. Just make the money. Just make the money. It's yours. Just keep recycling the money. You give it to us, let us give it back. You give it to us, let's get it back. Because if you're going to let these other people come here and live for absolutely free, and like you said, Pastor KL, you know, you're telling us to go get a job. Now you've got homeless people who don't have a place to live. So when you go apply for a job, you have no address to give them. You have no place to go and clean up to get a job. You have no clothes. You're talking about overloading of the shelter system. Now, I hate to bring this up, but I got to. You've got these people who have willingly gone into the shelter system so that they could benefit from the government and get Section 8 or, you know, some other housing plan they have. So you smash them for doing that, and now you allow these people to walk in, and guess what they're going to do? They're going to stay in these shelters, and they're going to voucher them up and give them benefits from a federally funded program that you have told the Americans is locked up. Brother Al, what am I talking about here?
Oh, you're talking right. That's exactly what they do. You know, again, when you go to apply for Section 8, oh, it's closed right now, oh, it's not open right now, but then these people come in, go right into that shelter, you know, because obviously his friend told him exactly what to do. Look, this is what I did, and this is what you could do, and this is what the country's going to do for you.
Yeah.
So they'll tell us, you know, it's locked. Well, we're not taking any more applications right now. And then these people will come right in. And get the full benefit while I'm still in the streets. They live in a nice apartment chilling.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh, Pastor KL, what are we talking about? You know, we can't get Section 8. And I know, like I said, I've heard people say, you know, I'm going to, you know, go be in my family, going to go in the shelter system because you get Section 8 quicker like that. And the government would bash them. See, we're bashing them for one reason. The government is bashing them for another reason. But yet you let the migrants come over here and do it. So how you bashing the people that's here that's doing it? They doing the same thing.
Well, you know what? In my former life, I was a property manager. And I've dealt with Section 8 and I've dealt with, you know, regular working class people. And yeah, there is people who literally will take their whole family into a shelter. Now, you know, while people are bashing them, that's a humbling experience. No one wants to live in a shelter, but they do it so they can make a better life for their children. You know, and here we are trying to make a better life in a place that's supposed to help us make a better life for us because this is supposed to be the greatest country in the world, and you're bashing us. You're bashing the people who lives here. You're bashing the people who the foundation of what is the best country in the world. And then folks who have no dime in this whole thing is able to just come in and freely get the benefits of being an American. And they're not even an American. You still have to go through years to get papers, but you have the benefit. Here I am, the American, and I have to be bashed because I'm trying to do what's best so I can be the best American I can. So I am not the one that's out there on the streets prostituting, you know, for the welfare of my children. I'm not out there on the street slinging dope for the welfare of my children. I'm not shooting people or robbing people. I'm just trying to get my piece of the pie in America. But it seems like the immigrants got the whole slice and the whole pie, and they had to do nothing for it.
Now, I do want to say, in response to your, I'm going to take my family and live up in the shelter system. You do have some. I knew a young lady. She was married. She had one child at the time, pregnant with the second. She lived in housing. And she gave up her housing apartment, lied and told the shelter system that her ex was after her, that she was in a domestic abuse situation, which was a lie because she wasn't. to stay in the shelter. Now, you had a place to live. Now, I grew up in housing. Ain't nobody got to tell me what housing is about. But you grew, I grew up in housing. You left from there to go stay in the shelter with your kids. Then you ended up in a tenement building. Now, I don't know of this. I'm a leave from where I live to go in the shelter system to make a better, you know, life for myself. I don't know about leaving a place that I have to live. Now, if you're living with someone, like, you know, you're still living with your parents and, you know, it's hell and, you know, all that kind of stuff, or you're overcrowded, or, you know, it's five of y'all in a bed and things like that, then maybe. But that particular type of thing is what I'm talking about. I'm talking about you got a place to live. But because you're trying to get better and you're trying to get on the Section 8, or they have other programs, because she didn't get the Section 8 program. She ended up getting another program. You know, I don't know about that. I ain't giving up a place I got to live. It may not be the best, but I'm going to take my family through what, well, we have a place to live. Then save your pennies, because you're in housing. Housing is only going to charge you 30% of your salary or your income. Go ahead, save up your pennies and move. But I'm not moving my family into no shelter system so that I can get a better piece of the pie. So if we are crowded, virtually homeless, almost homeless, that's a whole different story. But when and she had a decent apartment. Again, it said housing, but it was a pretty nice apartment. And when she told me the plan, I thought she was crazy. Because I'm going to tell you, I grew up in housing, and I'm sorry, that was not my plan. I worked hard and got up out of there with my daughter and did what I had to do. But I'm sorry, no. And this is why we get bashed. This is why we get bashed. This is why we get bashed. There's a comment from the listener. Let's say good morning to Shanti. Good morning, Shanti.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good, good, good. What you got? What are the listeners talking about?
Okay, we got a comment sent in that says, this is how America sees the natives. They figure that since we were born here, we already had the opportunity to get a job and become better, where we don't need food stamps and, you know, housing assistance, et cetera. And that's why they allow the other people to come here, because it's like they didn't have the opportunity you had. So, like, we're going to help them, but we're not going to help you because you don't need the help.
Okay, I have a question behind that. But before I ask my question, do you have a comment before I disconnect? Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, listener. Thank you for your comment.
I agree with what has been said for the most part. And, you know, it is sickening to sit and watch. You know, we're here struggling, or sometimes barely making it, or, you know, even if we are doing okay, we could use some assistance every now and then, and it's almost like you have to pull a John Q and hold people hostage in order to get help, versus these people, whether they come here legitimately or illegally, and they can just waltz into, you know, this country and build their own towns here, and, you know, they come here legally not having to put in any dues, but yet now we're patronizing them because they done took over certain areas. And it's, but I have said, I have a friend, and I wish he was listening right now. I have a friend who the other day had sitting outside a little while ago, maybe like a few months ago. He was sitting outside of his house, and he saw a real estate agent showing, I forgot what group of people it was, but they weren't American. He was showing them the house next door to his house. He said, I was sitting there watching, and after a while I was like, so you only want to show these type of people these houses? Like, you're not going to give no American a chance to buy this house. And I said, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. He said, yes, I did, because I'm tired of seeing them everywhere. They're everywhere. You turn around, you go here, they're everywhere. This my block. I said, first of all, you don't own no block. But, I mean, I understand what you're saying because they are taking over, but you don't own any block, you know. And I was really getting on him on the fact that he actually said that not only to the real estate agent but to the in front of the people, in front of the family. He said, well, next thing I knew, another set of people was moving in. And not that race. And I was like, oh, my God. So I don't know what happened. I don't know if he scared them with that question. I don't know. But it does make you annoyed, you know, at times to just see this. So I don't know, you know, if with the listeners, the comment that the listener sent in makes a lot of sense, you know, because I could see their logic being twisted like that. But it's just like, come on, like you have to do better by the people who are from here, born and raised here. Like, what are you really going to do for us? But yet, it's almost like, are you letting them come in because you want something from their people, you know, from their side? You know, I'm not into politics and don't have a desire to, don't care about really knowing it. But it's like, now it makes me think you keep letting these people in because you're really trying to get something on their end. Because America don't do anything free. And I agree with you, Pastor Steph. I've been saying this ever since they stopped it. Y'all might as well just go back to shutting everything down, just getting everybody money again, because you know they're going to give it back to you, and just letting this be the great circle of life since this is what y'all doing.
All right. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Shanti. Thank you for the comment from the listener. Two things. One, you went into a place, Shanti, where I was going. But before we get there, I want to ask you gentlemen about one of the pieces of the comment that the listener mentioned. They said, well, you know, America figures where they live, they didn't get the opportunity that we can present them with here. My question is, do we owe them? We owe them an opportunity. Why do we have to feel as though we have to give them an opportunity? Brother Al, what do you think?
I agree with you totally. We owe you because you didn't get the opportunity. I didn't get a lot of opportunities. So what's going on? That's a part of life. So, again, like I said, with America, it seems like what they do is like, okay, you know what? They so busy wanting to impress everybody else and make everybody else say, yeah, this is a great country, this and that, because they forget about us. So, you know, like you said, we don't owe you anything.
All righty. Pastor K.L., you know, the listener is probably right, because that's a segue into something else that Shanti spoke about that I wanted to bring up. But we owe them something because where they live, where they come from, they didn't get a chance.
No, we're not obligated at all. We're not obligated at all, at all, at all, at all. I mean, listen, you know, we've gone through stuff here in America. I don't see nobody giving us 52 cents a day to get some rice or nothing like that. I don't see nobody doing no telethons for me. You know, so they're not obligated to me. I'm not obligated to you. You know, not that you chose where you were born, but you chose to stay there. You know, that's I don't owe you that. And if you want better, you have to get better like everybody else is trying to get better. There's no handouts. You know, I've never had a handout. I've worked for everything I've got. You know, so no, there's no handout. Now, with what you said earlier about that story about that young lady, listen, if I'm living with my mama, I got a better place than being in the shelter. Mama might get on my nerve. Dad
Absolutely.
Might get on my nerve. But I'm still living in a better atmosphere and a better place than the shelter.
Absolutely.
I've heard horrific, horrific stories of the shelter. They steal your
yep.
stuff. They fight you. They
yep.
beat you. They rape you. They do all types of stuff in the
yep.
shelter. Who wants to do that unless you have to do it?
Have to. That's right. That's right. That's right. And that's why I brought up the young lady who I had been to her apartment. And I'm like, yo, when they know what she said, well, you know, I'm going to get Section 8. You want me living in something that's similar to Section 8? Is that a goal? I don't want to say, you got to go. I want to have my piece of the pie by living off of Section 8. I don't have nothing against Section 8, but my thing is that's your goal. And, you know, Listen, Section 8 is federally funded. It's nationwide. I've seen some people go get houses and rent the houses and, you know, in other states and things like that. But I'm sorry, that's not a goal. And that's why I said what I said, Pastor Gail, because I've heard horrific stories as well. And when she said, I'm like, okay, that's your plan, to actually go in a shelter. I'm going to take my children in a shelter where all kind of diseases and unhealthy conditions and violation and stealing and, oh, my gosh, you got to be kidding me. Yeah, so unfortunately, that's the way these people think. And so now you think about the migrants. Think about the migrants. So, y'all, see, because I go back to what Pastor, I mean, Brother Al said, they've made this thing seem so glorious. Remember, he was coming here because it's going to be adventuring. It seems like a nice place to be. Yeah, that was his. That's the persona. Now, really quickly, we got a couple of minutes, and this is something that I wanted to talk about. And I said about the vets. I wanted to talk about the vets because they have fought for this country. This country does nothing for them when they're finished. They take them, they throw them away. They're homeless. They're on the street, you know, living. They're begging. A lot of them are mentally ill, for the real deal, mentally ill. And now, this is why I say we have no business fighting for this country, because now we fight for this country. We're left like this, and you don't know the secrets that are kept, that keep us in dealing, where we have to now take your migrants because you're doing stuff for us. That's where my head went when I read this. And I'm like, this is why I look at these poor veterans and I'm like, y'all fought for this country. Y'all don't even know what y'all are ultimately fighting for, because the United States does not tell you all of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes that we will never know anything about. And now y'all got these secret deals going on. Now we're accepting your migrants. Now we got to accept your this one. Now we got to accept your this. And now we got to accept your that. Take your this, take your that. Because now we got to get something from you in return. Because like Shanti said, ain't nothing free. They do nothing free. Brother Al.
Yes. What you were saying, I mean, we've been hitting on the top. I've been saying that for the longest on how they do the vets, you know. And like you said, from the stress that they've been through for fighting in these wars and seeing dead bodies and all type of just violence. And then, you know, they do some that they feel is okay. What they do, they throw them in the post office. And then you wonder why, oh, he didn't go on postal, because he's not fully mentally healed, you know. And then you throw him in the post office to go out there and work with people, and he out there walking and getting flashbacks and all type of craziness, you know. And they don't take care of the vets. Are the main one they should take care of for going out here fighting for this country, for our so-called country, you know. And they just treat him bad. Don't, like, yeah, okay, he homeless, all right, whatever. But then, like you said, somebody come from another country, oh, come on right on there, what you need? We got what you need. Just sign these papers, get anything you need. Insane.
And that's because they're in secret dealings with these people. And this is why,
yes,
these type of things go on.
Yeah, yeah. And then they'll tell certain people, they'll tell, you know, certain people about things that go on. Like what I've seen a lot, and there's nothing against nobody, who else gets a lot of stuff like that with no problem, is the Jewish people too. I've seen it. Oh, my God, I've seen it. Where they come in and just get whatever. And I'm just like, wow. But here I am standing on the line, and you tell me no. And I saw you take him through the back door.
Woo. All righty, Brother Al. We only got the front door for you going forward, Brother Al. Got the front door going forward.
Only the front door.
Pastor Kale. That's right. We got to take care of our Brother Al. Pastor Kale, we're talking about the fact that, you know, there's a lot of secret dealings going on. We have no idea what you're talking about in the background. You know, you make it seem as though, you know, we know everything that's going on. But no, poor little veterans, they didn't fought for this country, and they don't even know what they fought for. And now we got to deal with all of this stuff because they now have, exchanged something, and we have no say-so.
Right. I think that the veterans You know, the people who fight for us is the foundation of our country. They keep us safe. They keep us protected. You know, they put themselves on the line every day, whether they're in combat or not, because they never know when they're going to be attacked. You know, and to just treat them after they've done their service, to do a disservice to them, I think is absolutely crazy. So as long as you're fighting for me, you're important in my life, in my structure, in my situation. Once you decide that it's over, then everything is over. You are disconnected. We no longer know you. Now our favorite phrase is, thank you for your service. So we're just thanking them in words and lip service. But now I've lost a leg. I've lost a limb. My mind is not there anymore. And all I get is a thank you for your service while I'm laying on the park bench, while I'm laying outside, while I have to beg. The only time I can get a free meal is on Veterans Day. Every other day, then I have to fend for myself. You know, and I think that a lot of these presidents who have made all these deals with these other countries, that's the underlying stuff, that they're able to come in and we'll fund them.
Yep.
And we'll give them free this and we'll give them free that.
Yep.
Because
we have
already made allegiance and alignments with all these other countries that we, the peons, if you will, we don't get to see that. We're not privy to. So it looks preposterous to us. However, this is what's going on all the time. It's just not, it's not new. It's just new to us. And we're offended by it. But there's an underline where it says that it's okay because this is what we do for each other as far as the countries.
Yep. You know, we will never know. We will never know the secrets that go on in the background. Never know the secrets that go on in the background. And, you know, they're coming here and, you know, you know what? Okay, and I want to talk to you too, and then I'm going to take this here as a man. As a man, you know, and I'm sure there's many ways we can look at this. The man says he went to apply for the assistance. I don't know. What do you feel about, you know, because, you know, every time I turn around, a man is telling me, you know, I got to make sure I take care of my family. And is this really taking care of your family? I do understand that there are many ways we can look at this. And I'm not saying this with no quote-unquote judgment. I'm just asking two men who now you've made your family in Venezuela. You found an opportunity to come over to America where they say it's the melting pot. You should be able to get anything you want to get. You can, you know, apply for assisted living for 2 years. What does a man think about this, Brother Al?
Well, again, like you said, you could look at it several different ways. I'm just running it across my mind while you're talking about it. And as a man, you look at it and be like, nah, you know, that I'm going to just take my family up and go put them in a shelter where there's danger, there's not clean, it's not safe, and take my kids and my family and take them there. And as a man, you look like, that's not taking care of my family. But then on the other hand, if you're living in Venezuela and your family is in danger of dying or getting killed, then that's a different story. Because now what you're doing is taking your family out of harm's way.
Okay. So if they're not, so here's the thing, and I want to present this. It doesn't seem as in this scenario that we're talking about today, that they are fleeing in danger. No. I'm just saying. Because I'm going to ask you your thought process on that. Because like you said, of course, if, you know, like the other. Okay, remember a month or so ago, we were talking about the people who were coming here and they were doing like some real risky things because they were in danger, you know, coming from Mexico. They were in real danger. Mm. So they were doing whatever they needed to do to get over here to America to be on safe ground. Now, in this particular case, we're not running, quote unquote. It's just an open opportunity to come over and be in America. And like I said, they're not saying I'm giving out jobs. They're saying I'm coming over here to find out if I can qualify with my four kids and my wife for assisted living. Does that change in your the thought process in your head?
Yes, exactly. Because now you're just looking to get over. And, you know, you're just looking at, okay, let me go over here and get this free money. Because, like I said, I'm quite sure his friend told him, listen, you come over here, yo, you're going to get this, and that. And you ain't got to pay it back, and you ain't getting that. So, yeah, that's like freeloading to me. You're freeloading. You know, let me go over here and get this free stuff. You know, you're freeloading. And that's not taking care of your family as a man to freeload.
All righty. Pastor KL, many ways to look at this thing. Judgment-free question, if you will. How does a man who has a family see this? How do you see this?
Well, I, again, me personally, I guess my pride won't allow me to get a handout. Now, if I'm at my last rope and it seems like there's nothing else I can do, you know, for my people, my children or my wife to survive, then at some point we have to do what we have to do. But as a man, you try to do everything in your power, you know, saying you go without eating so that your children can eat. You know, you go without eating so that your wife can eat. You know, you do little odds and ends. You sweep in front of the bodega. You do different kind of things. You know, even going back to your story when you said that the young lady who had a man, you know, but yet she still went into the shelter. As a man, I don't know if I would have even allowed that, because we have a place, you know, already. You know what I mean? We can just work and get a goal structure to get out of here if we need to. But I don't think that you putting my children in harm's way. So that you can get a place, a better place than where you live in. To me, that's kind of vain. You know, to me, it's not out of necessity. It's just something that you want. You know, and God said, I'll supply all your needs. You know what I'm saying? And then later on, if you do what I need you to do, then I'll give you the desires of your heart. So you know, sometimes we have to get in line with what the word says.
All righty. Thank you so much, gentlemen. You have shed a lot of light. I'm sure you've given people something to think about today. And we appreciate your contribution to today's conversation. Really important, really important for people to hear, you know, the different views on this, you know, we're all New Yorkers. KL, your Pastor KL, your family still lives here in New York, and you know, it affects, because here's the thing, it's not just New York. They've been dispersing them around the nation. It's not just New York. And you know, this got picked up because your boy Mayor Adams, you know, has been speaking, you know, in regards to it. So, you know, in Alabama, I'm sure it's going on. In California, it's going on. In Texas, it's going on. In Wisconsin, it's going on. It's going on everywhere. So, you know, it's something that we have to watch out. So thank you for, let me finish my sentence. Thank you. Thank you so much. And we pray you have a blessed weekend.
You do the same.
You as well.
Thank you. Let's get this benediction. Number 62226. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. You know, The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine on you and be gracious to you. You know, every day I close, I say, please do not miss this opportunity to give Jesus your life. Because, in you know, late is not promised to us. You know, and that's, and I've said this before to clarify things. It has nothing to do with the physical life and death. You know, you're dead in a grave. Late is not promised to you is the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. You know, we are not trouble-free as Christian people. I don't want anybody to think that. And I remember reading an article that said that one of the worst things we can do as Christians is present Jesus and the life in the Lord as trouble-free, because that's one of the reasons why people become so discouraged when things go wrong or when things get hard, because, you know, somebody then painted this picture that what, you know, entering into a life with Christ means that you go through nothing. And that's not reality. By far, not reality, but it's how we deal with the challenges of life. It's how we allow God to fight the battle. It's how, you know, we face the opposition every day. And when I read that verse, it, you know, in light of what we're talking about, and we're talking about the ill balance of, you know, here we are, New Yorkers. And the three of us, at least, you know, can attest to, you know, when there were times when we could have used a little additional help, as Shanti said, you know, we weren't destitute, thank God, but we could have used a little extra, you know, edge to help us get across that threshold. We were told no, flat out no. I will personally attest to not being able to get a secondary medical assistance. You know, I have like Medicare, and you know, they always ask you, you know, do you have a secondary medical coverage, because it'll pick up what Medicare doesn't cover. And I remember a couple of years ago, because they gave us, like, you know, at the top of the year they always give, you know, like a couple of dollars, like an increase, I went over by $5. I was $5 over. And they said, because of that, I could not get secondary medical assistance. So that leaves me, no matter what medical care I get, I still got to pay 20% of the bill. Now, who's to say with a mortgage that I have 20% every time I go to the doctor or I have to go to the emergency room? God forbid surgery. 20% of any surgical procedure is what I'll be paying that till I am a senior citizen getting retirement, Social Security. And this is what we're talking about. This is what we're talking about when we say accept Jesus as your personal Savior. Because I just make a phone call. Listen, this is what I got. This, you can have this. And I get no problem. And I guarantee you the reason why I'm not scratching my head, I'm not stressing out, is because I've given my life to the Lord. And there's some comfort and assurance that, you know what, I've never seen the righteous forsaken or begging bread. And people who don't know God don't know that kind of peace. People who don't know God don't know that kind of comfort from him. People who don't know God don't know that kind of resting in him that says, you know what, God, I can't pay this bill. And while everybody else is getting for free and they've had to do nothing, that I've paid taxes since I was a teenager and I can't get the same benefit that I've paid into. But you have never ever forsaken me or my family. Have we always had the steak and potatoes on the table? No. However, I serve a God that covers me from head to toe. And that's why we're here every day. That's why God has allowed this broadcast to be on demand and almost on every single platform. We are close to 50% of our listeners coming from Cambodia. Yeah, I told y'all that before. I watched these numbers. We are close to 50% of our listens come from Cambodia. That means that United States is gelled in with the other 50%. So four other countries take up that 50%, including the United States. We must be saying something that somebody needs to hear. So I say to you who are right here in America, don't let that opportunity pass you by. Get that peace that only God can give you. Get that joy that only God can give you. Get that love and comfort that only God can give you, because it's not coming from no place else. Don't let the outsiders get more than what you're getting, and you're right here with us. I'm not mad. I rejoice at the fact that we are in 48 countries, including Congo, including Tasmania. I mean, I'm going to really take some time one day and read the countries that are listening to us. And shame on you if you let a country who doesn't even speak English dominate the board and we're talking your language. Because clearly God is talking to Cambodia and they're listening. Because they're adding on the listens. How do you think they're becoming 50% of our listens? So when we have 600 listens in one day, how many people are in the United States who've listened out of that 600? We've had up to 2,800 people or listens in one day. One day in a 24-hour period, 2,800 listens in one day. Unbelievable. The people that are talking from a basement, from a job, from a couch, outside of Walmart. I mean, we are doing normal things, but we're giving the word of God. So God is showing you that I'm pulling out everything to ensure that none of you have to perish. I promised you that I would present my son to everybody before I wrap this up here. And he is doing just that. Don't be on the sidelines and miss what's in front of your face. Because see, that's what's happening to us and these migrants. There are people who are still complaining that they're coming over here and stealing our jobs. They ain't stealing nothing. But if you were productive, they wouldn't have anything to steal. Now, the opportunity they are getting, that's a whole different story. But don't miss this opportunity to give God your life right now so that you benefit from the English language. That's your first language. In Cambodia, it's not. But here, it's your first language. Don't miss that opportunity. You've been listening to It's Due Time with Pastor Steph. Join us Monday through Friday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. where we discuss matters of the heart, mind, and spirit. As you go through your day, be sure to set your mind on things that are above, not on things that are on the earth. They will only serve as a distraction. Remember, prayer changes things. It's Pastor Steph signing off, and I want to thank my gentleman, my due time crew, for coming through big time today and giving you some thought-provoking things that will take you straight into the weekend. I want to thank you for participating all week, joining in the conversation, and help. Do not miss this opportunity to give God your life right now, because later is not promised to us. If you've already given God your life, utilize this time to grow deeper in a relationship with him. Until Sunday, God Spare Our Life, where the Word Prayer Project is live on Facebook and A Closer World Christian Talk Show YouTube channel. I love you.